Power Records presents Power Records presents.
We are in a communication center housed in a cave of ice beneath the surface of a frozen, mist-shrouded planet somewhere in space.
Power Records presents.
Can you hear what? I don't hear anything unusual.
A sort of strange, haunting music. It's been coming in on an interstellar frequency, softly intermittent, but at regular intervals, as though it were a message, perhaps a call for help.
Icy Roads presents Power Records Playhouse.
Join us as we journey back to a time when the power of imagination ruled. Here, we'll explore the worlds of classic Peter Pan and Power Records, from the exciting to the whimsical and everything in between. So, sit back, relax, and let the Power Records Playhouse transport you to a world of captivating stories and unforgettable characters.
Hello everyone, my name is Petey Power and I am your host. Welcome to the show, let's jump into it. The first story record we are going to give a listen to goes out to good friend of the show, Mark Alley. He reached out to us over on Facebook at facebook.com/Acerobots and made it known that he would like to hear another Conan the Barbarian adventure. Here you go. Mark, this one is called Shadow of the Stolen City. It's number PR3130 and it came out in 1976. That was a great year for story records. Good old 1976, the year of our Lord. This one is for you, Mark. I hope you like it.
The desert. It covers countless thousands of square miles of the Earth's surface and drowns a man's tracks as surely as if it were the raging sea. And a man alone, set down in the midst of this barren, relentless waste, seems but a pitiful, helpless thing indeed. It is just past dawn when Conan sees the man. Already the blood-red sun beats down like some great beaming hammer upon the Cimmerian's brow as his Zamboulan stallion gallops across the ever-shifting sands. For a moment, a thought crosses his mind. Mirage. But then...
By God, it is a man. Out here alone in the middle of the desert. Hard to make him out. Whoa, boy, steady. Well, it's no mirage, as we first thought, but a real man. He's gesturing to me. Oh, Greybeard, what are you doing out here alone?
My name is Sarka, and my beard, young man, is not gray, it's white.
My apologies, but my question remains. What are you doing out here alone in this desolate place?
I am here because someone has stolen my city.
What?
Aye, as I said, I am Sarkov by name, a sorcerer by trade.
Sorcerer?
Oh, one of your most kind-hearted types, let me assure you. I live but to protect my city, which is called Khorasan. At least I did protect it until last night. It was stolen away from under me while I slept. I woke to find it gone. Gone.
No one can steal a whole city, old man.
Then what am I doing here out in the middle of nowhere?
I'll admit, I don't know, but I can't...
He stole it, I tell you, right from under my nose. And you must help me find it.
I tend to steer clear of wizards, but you seem harmless enough. If I help you find this stolen city of yours, what will I get out of it?
Peace of mind and a tranquil heart.
Not enough. I was thinking about money.
I deal in magic, not gold. I'm a sorcerer, not an alchemist. But let's see. There must be something I can... Yes, that's it. If you help me find and rescue my stolen city, I will use my great powers to give you a throne. The throne of a whole city.
A throne, eh? Well, some time back, an ancient wizard prophesied that I would one day become a king. Perhaps you, who look even older than he was, are the one who will bring that to pass.
Never doubt it, barbarian. I may look old. I am old. But I am still a mighty sorcerer.
All right. I'll take a chance with you, old man.
Sarka. The name is Sarka. Have a little respect.
All right, Sarkov. Here,
Let me help you onto the saddle, and we'll be off. Now, where is this city of yours, this Khorasan?
Well, it was north of here, near Shemakesh. But now I don't...
North of... You old fool. Shemakesh is south of here.
What? That can't be. How?
It's clear as the nose on your wrinkled face. Your city wasn't transported away last night. You were.
But that's impossible. Such things just aren't done. Not to sorcerers. Even he couldn't do such a thing. At least, I don't think he could. But then again...
Who is he?
Why, Zorval, of course. He's another sorcerer, my bitter rival.
What else can you tell me about him?
Why, only that he's my son.
Your son?
But that was centuries ago. You see, for years, Zorval has wanted to begin a holy war against Shemakesh. But the Queen of Khorasan took my advice and wouldn't let him lead her city into a war. But now, with me gone, the desert may turn red with blood.
Then that's why he got rid of you.
Aye. And now our queen, Mehet is her name, doubtless believes I'm dead. So she'll probably fall under his sway. Right this moment, he's probably drafting all able-bodied young men to fight his holy war for him.
Do you think he knows I found you and plan to help you?
Oh, I'm quite sure he does.
Why?
Well, just to look up at the sky.
At that moment, Conan suddenly sees the sky has grown black. Yet it is not filled with clouds, but with great giant bats, their inhuman cries turning his blood to ice. Onward and downward they come, like some great dark blanket of fangs and claws. Conan feels the hairs rise on the nape of his neck, and as he draws his sword...
Ishtar and Mitra!
They are the shadow bats. They're a special creation of my son. He's always been very proud of them.
You're a sorcerer. How do we fight them?
I'm afraid I've never been able to. I guess you might try your sword.
Just then, the great bat-like monsters are upon them. With a snarl that is lost among the gibbering, flittering mass, the Cimmerian swings his great broad sword again and again, cutting a swath through them.
Shadow bats are not. They're solid enough to be cut and to die. Fight from. But so many of them. My sword. Let go of me.
It's no use, Barbarian. Now it's got us both. All we can do is relax and hope it takes us to Zorval.
The following moment, Conan finds himself lifted bodily as if he were a child's toy from his horse. As he and the aged Zarkov are borne skyward at a speed which sends the wind whistling by their ears.
He's veering off from the rest. Then he must be taking up the Khorasan.
I've still got my knife. But no sense using it now. We're too high up. If I slew the creature, we'd just fall to our deaths. Got to bide my time.
Look, there it is.
You mean...
Yes, Khorasan. My stolen city. I recognize the castle. See? In fact, that's where it seems to be taking us now. We're descending.
Lower sweeps the circling gigantic bat. Finally, they are directly over the castle grounds.
We're low enough to survive now if this thing dropped us. Must strike now!
Stung by the barbarian's hard thrust weapon, the startled monster drops both Conan and the wizard.
Are you all right, Zarkov?
Yes, but where are...
We fell through a skylight, but I guess your magic made us land unhurt. We're in some vast chamber.
Ah, then we are bruised, but unbowed.
But that is only a matter of time, Zarkov. For both of you.
Who the devil?
Zorval!
Now I see him. There in the shadows. Son or not, Zarkov, he's an evil-looking specimen. But now I see a throne beside him. And the woman sitting in it.
I am Mayhet, Queen of Khorasan. It is good to see you again, Zarkov. Your dear son told me you were dead.
Not quite accurate, my queen.
My queen now, dear father. You should have been content to die where I left you instead of returning here. Your end will but be that much more terrible.
No one has driven me out of Khorasan in 300 years, and no one is going to stop now.
So be it. The decision to resist is yours, and I see you brought some broad-shouldered barbarian to try to help you enforce it. Guards, seize them both!
We've got him, sire.
It's one thing to seize the Sumerian dogs, and another to hold him.
He's certainly a strong one, Zarval. Perhaps instead of harming him, you should add him to your army for your holy war.
There must be no more, your majesty.
Silence! Keep your distance, father. I warn you. If you try to approach the throne...
I always told your mother she should have been more firm with you. A pity she died when you were only 90. Now, about this war. Zarkov, I am all right, barbarian.
Ishtar, that mystic burst would have slain a normal man.
We are neither of us normal men, my son. Now, why don't we...
No! You are the one person who could ever challenge my power. So you must die, father or no.
In that case, my son, I must do this.
Oh, a mighty blast.
And the next one will be stronger.
Ha! My own burst parried it. The battle is joined, then.
Yes, regrettably. The battle is joined.
Krom, they're getting nowhere. I wonder what they'll try next.
Then suddenly, before the startled eyes of the barbarian and the young queen, each man conjures up a glowing, mystic warrior, a shining double of himself, and the two of them clash in cosmic combat.
So bright, I can hardly look at them.
And now, the two gleaming warriors strive, one against another, face to face, no swords, but only strength against strength.
They're near equal in skills. Zarkov is old. He's tiring. I can see his double getting weaker by the second. Soon, Zarval will overcome him and...
Barbarian, come to me. I need your help.
I'm here, but what can my sword do against magic?
Take my hand, and I'll gain your strength. Hurry!
Puzzled, the brawny Sumerian grasps the feeble human hand that reaches out toward him. In that self-same instant, he suddenly feels as if he is drawn out of his own body, pulled mystically, powerfully, through that of the ancient wizard Zarkov, so that the next moment, the mystic warrior of Zarval is grappling with a figure like that of Conan the Barbarian, added to the mystic might of the wily Zarkov.
Oh, can't fight both of you?
And the next moment, the glowing Conan warrior forces the other to its knees with its sheer savagery. Then, with mighty arms, it crushes its foe into a pulsating mass and hurls it in a living ball of fiery energy toward the screaming Zarval. Then, when the light has faded...
Where is Zarval?
My son is no more.
Sorry.
No need to be. He had a long life, if not necessarily a good one.
Well, then, not to rush things unduly, but what about my reward?
Oh, yes. Your Majesty, I'm afraid that I promised this young man a throne if he saved your city, our city, from the clutches of Zarval. I know I had no authority to do so. But I...
Say no more, dear Zarkov. Ruling a city in the desert is lonely work. I have been lonely here, and you, barbarian, are a very handsome young man.
Then you and your people would accept me as your king?
King? Oh, no. Khorasan has forever been ruled by a queen. and ever shall be. But you will still get to sit on a throne, only it would be a little lower than my own. And you could wear a crown. A little one, of course.
Of course.
But there are things you could lord it over. The annual date merchants' festival, for instance, or the caravans of camels which pass through the city. I find them much too smelly. Oh, and occasionally there might be an archery contest.
Sarkov, is this what you meant by giving me a throne? Marrying me to this...
Well, it seemed like a good idea at the time.
Then I free you from your bargain. I'm afraid I must decline your generous offer, Your Majesty.
What? I'm afraid I don't quite...
Sorry, Highness, I have business up north, where I heard there are new wars stirring among the Hyborians. But for me, just give me a sword on my hip and a horse between my knees.
Hi again. Pete Power here. That was really fun. Conan is a thought-provoking barbarian. You'd be hard-pressed to call him a good guy. He was very disrespectful to that old man, and he is a cold-blooded murderer as well. Irregardless of all that, Conan is a very successful fictional character. He's been in books, movies, cartoons, story records, and toys as well. Let's take a quick break and hear a commercial for some Conan toys from the 90s.
Conan! The adventurer.
Starting tall out of legend comes the greatest warrior the world has ever known, Conan the Adventurer. Feel the power of the magnificent Star Metal Sword as Conan fights side by side with his courageous allies, Zula, Jasmine, Grey Wolf, and Needle, in a never-ending quest to vanquish the evil snake wizard Rathamon and his ruthless serpent horde. It's adventure beyond imagination, danger beyond your wildest dreams, and action bigger than you've ever seen before. Live the legend of Conan the Adventurer.
Conan!
Coming soon from Hasbro.
Wow, that's cool, I guess. Not really my thing, but if you dig it, rock on. So up next, we have a fun little Superman story. It's called Hasbro Superpowers, The Adventures of Superman Listen and Look Book. It was produced in 1984 and came with a cassette. The Superpowers by Kenner, which this is based on, was a terrific toy line. Nothing like that Conan the Adventurer stuff. Anyhow, let's hit play on the tape and have a listen. See you soon.
This is your Superman Listen and Look Book. Every time you hear this chime, it means it's time to turn the page in your storybook. When you finish listening to this story, you can turn the tape over and record your own Superman story. All right, now let's begin. Long ago, on the planet Krypton, a scientist named Jor-El made a frightening discovery.
Our planet is going to explode soon,
he told his wife.
Everything will be destroyed. We must try to save our baby son.
Jor-El built a small rocket ship for the baby.
We will send our son far away to a planet called Earth,
he told his wife.
There, he will be safe.
They kissed their baby goodbye, put him into the rocket ship, and sadly watched it take off. For 2 years, the baby flew through space, safe inside his little rocket ship. When the rocket ship landed on Earth, a farmer and his wife, driving along in their truck, saw the ship at the side of the road. They were amazed to find a little boy inside. Ma and Pa Kent adopted the child as their own son. They named him Clark. It wasn't long before they realized that Clark was a very unusual boy. For one thing, he could fly.
Jumpin' Jehoshaphat!
Clark was also very strong.
Can I help, Paul?
Fortunately, Clark's hair did not grow long, for no scissors could cut it.
There's a letter for you, Ma.
Clark could see things that were very far away.
Uh-oh, that bale of hay is falling. Got it.
Thanks, son.
Clark could run faster than the eye could see. His heat vision was red hot. And he could see through everything but lead.
Oh, boy! A locomotive!
Clark's clothes wore out almost as quickly as Ma Kent made them. Ordinary cloth just wasn't strong enough for a boy with superpowers. Ma Kent made a super suit for him to wear under his clothes. She used the yarn from the super strong blankets that she had found in the little rocket ship. Nothing could harm Clark's special suit, and it stretched as he grew. When Clark started going to school, Pa Kent had a talk with him.
Your special powers could frighten people, Clark,
he said.
So you must try to hide them. When the time comes, you should use your powers to help people.
Many years passed, and Clark grew up. He became a news reporter. And he never forgot his father's advice. He used his amazing superpowers to fight crime and help people everywhere. One day, Clark and his friend Lois Lane were watching a news film on television.
Too bad you're not as strong as he is, Clark,
Lois said. No one, not even Lois Lane, suspected that shy, meek Clark Kent was really Superman. One morning in the newsroom, Clark heard a voice from far away. He rushed to a nearby storeroom and tore off his business suit.
This is a job for Superman. A bank robbery.
Faster than a jet plane, Superman flew over the city. With his supervision, he scanned the streets below. Inside the bank.
Thank goodness you came, Superman.
The robbers! They're getting away!
In a flash, Superman lassoed one of the robbers.
Yoinks!
I'll tell your pals that you're all tied up.
Outside, the other two robbers' backpacks opened up. Whirling blades popped out, and the two crooks took off into the air. One of them switched on a two-way radio.
The gates are base,
he said.
Dodge has been caught. Weems and I are on our way in.
The radio crackled.
Base to McGee. As long as you've got your money, report in 5 minutes. Over and out.
Not so fast, you two.
With super speed, Superman flew after the escaping robbers. He grabbed the spinning blades of the crook's flying machines. The blades stopped spinning. But now, the two crooks whirled around and around. The bank's money flew everywhere.
Oh! Oh! Stop!
We give up!
Superman tucked the crook safely under one arm and spread his cape. In an instant, he had caught all the falling money before it hit the ground. Then Superman took the money and the crooks to the police. Suddenly, a voice came over the crook's radio.
Come in, Betty. Where are you? Is anything wrong? Report at once.
Superman grabbed the radio.
I'll give your boss a report in living color.
With his supervision, Superman followed the radio waves to the ocean.
The voice is coming from that cottage on the island. Great Krypton! This is the lair of an evil mastermind.
Come in, McKee. Come in.
Come in? Thanks. I think I will.
As the boat left, a switch automatically set off a bomb.
You can't catch me. What a bang-up finish for Superman!
But of course, the explosion didn't hurt Superman. He sped through the water like a torpedo, lifted up the crook's boat, and carried it back to shore.
Here's a flying finish for you.
Well, it looks as if you've wrapped up the whole gang, Superman.
The police chief said, as he locked the last of the criminals in jail.
For all the people of Metropolis, I thank you.
Back in the newsroom, Lois Lane read Clark's news story about the bank robbery.
This is a pretty exciting story, Clark.
She said.
I'd give anything to know who that Superman really is.
Clark Kent just smiled and winked an eye.
You are listening to KRGF 92.3 in Santa Rosa and maybe KWTF 88.1 in Bodega Bay.
That was an interesting tale. A bit on the juvenile side, but one has to remember, these records and tapes were made for children. If we can get some enjoyment out of them, that is great, but we are not the intended audience. Let's move on. Up next, we are going to take a quick break for some public service announcements. The first one features Superman. It's about smoking. Then after that is a warning from Ralph Nader about buying kryptonite. That sounds interesting. Let's take a listen.
Come on, kids. If you want to grow up fast, take one of these. One puff and they'll soon be in my grasp.
Hey! Not so fast, nicotine. If you want to go up fast, take one of these. With my X-ray vision, I can see the harm cigarettes do inside people's bodies. That's why I never say yes to a cigarette.
Those of you considering the purchase of kryptonite, remember, know your kryptonite. Today, there are plenty of sleazy retailers out there who will tell you that one type is as good as another. This is a fraudulent claim. Don't be fooled by it. Gold kryptonite robs you of your superpower.
Green kryptonite makes you drowsy, inert, and eventually destroy you.
Red kryptonite, now that's the unpredictable stuff. It could turn you into bizarre forms and shapes. One final word of warning. If the kryptonite is not properly and clearly labeled, take your business elsewhere. Thank you.
That Ralph Nader is a heck of a guy. He even looks after you when you are trying to buy the one thing that can kill Superman. That's consumer protection for you. Before we move on to the next record, it was brought to my attention recently that not everyone is familiar with the history of Power Records, so I felt it best to do a little lesson on it to hip you cats to the scenario. My good friend Derek from World's Famous and The Derek Show on Acerobots Radio and KRJF in Santa Rosa is here to read a little essay he copied from the internet. Take it away, Derek.
Peter Pan Records is an American record label specializing in children's music. The label was introduced to the public in March 1948. The label was owned by the Synthetic Plastics Company of Newark, New Jersey until the 1970s. The label became one of the largest and most successful children's specialty record labels in America, manufacturing releases that often contrasted with those of its competitors, Golden Records, Disneyland Records, Wonderland Records, Kid Stuff Records, and Pickwick Records. Peter Pan enjoyed its greatest success as a children's label during the 1950s. Many of their most famous releases were issued on 78 RPM 7 and 10-inch records, and on 45 RPM 7-inch records. Releases credited a variety of performers, including Dick Edwards with the Peter Pan Chorus and Orchestra, the Peter Pan Players, and variations on these titles. The label was notable for its series of book and record sets, combining an illustrated storybook and, later, comic book, with a vinyl record that contained music and narration by your Peter Pan storyteller, who would prompt the listener to turn the page at the sound of a bell or similar sound. Others featured a repertory company of actors performing the stories as audio dramas. Peter Pan also produced original stories, most of them based upon TV and film franchises such as The $6 Million Man, Space 1999, Star Trek, the original series, Kojak, and Planet of the Apes. Another original title was The Amazing Adventures of Hollow Man, whose publication did not last beyond its introductory issue. In the 1970s, many of these properties were released by its subsidiary label Power Records.
Wow, Derek, that was a lot of info. Next time, try and stick to the pertinent facts. Thank you, though. Up next, we have one of those Hollow Man stories that Derek was talking about. Let's see what all the hubbub is about.
Incoherent laser beams converge within your body and transform you into the world's first living hologram. Your abilities are awesome and may be called upon by concentrating your thought energy with definite purpose. Just concentrate and these powers will be yours.
Secret U.S. government laser development complex in a sparsely populated region of Texas, north of Dallas. Two sinister agents of an alien power quietly approach the inner security perimeter, carefully avoiding the intricate alarm system, and penetrating to the very heart of this vital energy laboratory.
By rerouting these power lines, the current for the laser device will be increased tenfold.
Yes, comrade. The American leader will surely perish in the explosion.
While at this very moment, unaware of the unbidden intruders only a few scant feet away, Dr. Robinson, the noted laser physicist, is conferring with his assistant, Dr. Hugo Petrovich.
The holographic plates have been aligned according to the computer printout, Hugo. Has the target area been prepared?
Yes, Jim. The deuterium will be placed in position according to your specifications.
Approaching the main laser lab, the President of the United States is just completing a tour of the complex and is eagerly anticipating a very special demonstration being prepared for him.
Mr. President, these laser guns are fantastic. I heard that one blast from the big one they have here can demolish an enemy tank.
I'm sorry, sir, but Dr. Robinson prefers that our research here be directed toward world peace, not war.
Good morning, Mr. President. I'm sorry I couldn't accompany you on your tour, but I had to supervise the final modifications for the demonstration.
Just what is it that I'll be seeing, Dr. Robinson?
Mr. President, you will be able to observe firsthand a new means of obtaining cheap and clean fuel through laser-induced thermonuclear fusion.
That sounds wonderful, Dr. Robinson. It could be the solution our energy-hungry country has been looking for.
Let's hope so, Mr. President. Now, if you'll come with me to the demonstration area. If you will please wear these protective lenses to protect your eyes, Mr. President.
Of course, Doctor, but are you sure this experiment is safe?
This is a controlled thermonuclear fusion, sir. We have included two ruby pulse lasers in the demonstration to provide you with holographic pictures to study following the actual fusion.
Holographic pictures? What?
Those two smaller laser devices will be activated at the very instant fusion occurs. Their beams will be split by mirrors, and the image of the fusion will be refracted through lenses onto those large plates you see in the background. The result will be totally three-dimensional reconstructions of the original subject appearing to float within each holographic plate.
What do you call these three-dimensional pictures, Doctor?
They are called holograms, Mr. President, and you will probably find them more amazing than the actual fusion demonstration.
Well, Dr. Robinson, I'm ready to see this amazing display.
Very well, Mr. President. I am now activating the lasers. Watch the deuterium cylinder and... Something is wrong. The circuits are overloading. Everyone, take cover. Mr. President, watch out!
Laser devices emitting pure, concentrated energy of a magnitude never before seen on Earth bombard the heroic James Robinson with refracted beams of such intensity that his body's molecular structure at the moment of disintegration is recorded holographically through a perfect interference pattern onto the one holographic plate not shattered by the blast. Can a mere mortal withstand such an onslaught? In the midst of this terrible violence, the room opens to the universe. Through this laser-produced tear in the fabric of time and space appears a mind aura, drawn from a distant dimensional plateau. The aura takes human form, and probing Jim's mind through the power of cosmic telepathy, communicates.
Jim Robinson, do not fear my presence. I am a friend you will come to know as Laser Man. I have caused time to warp momentarily, permitting the safe evacuation of the President and your colleagues and shielding us from their eyes. Your accident has made you a special man among all men in every dimension of time. Listen carefully as I remove you from this holographic cocoon and learn of your powers.
The coherent laser beams converged within your body and transformed you into the world's first living hologram. Your abilities are awesome and may be called upon by concentrating your thought energies with definite purpose. Just concentrate and these powers will be yours. You can create illusionary holograms to startle and confuse your antagonist. You have the power to travel through every dimensional level of time and space by holographically warping the molecules of your body. Through the power of holographic molecular alteration, you have the ability to blend into your surroundings, making you virtually invisible when you do not wish your presence known. And the key which unlocks the superpowers within you is contained in this holodisc, which I have brought you from a future time dimension. You must use this holo disc to recharge your holo energy force once every 12 hours to prevent your powers from fading. I must leave you now, James Robinson, but we will meet again soon. Go forth now as Holo Man to engage the forces of evil in battles from which the preservation of good must triumph and the suffering of mankind shall be eased throughout the world.
Must have been unconscious. What a strange dream.
Oh,
Hugo, is that you?
Jim, thank heavens, sir. All right. The President and the others left hours ago. They didn't see me here.
Hours ago? That accident really knocked me for a loop.
It was no accident, Jim. It was sabotage. And I helped them.
Hugo, no, I don't believe it.
It's true, Jim. I gave them the secret blueprints to this complex. Told them how to bypass the security alarm system. Had to save my family. They are being held prisoner to force my cooperation.
Who made you do this, and why?
The Saurians, your former countrymen, they have developed holographic decoy weapons system. They plan to fill the skies over all the major U.S. cities with holograms, three-dimensional images of nuclear missiles. In the confusion and panic that follows, they will launch the real attack to overpower and enslave the United States.
Incredible. And the attempt today to kill the president?
To add to the confusion. Jim, you must get to Washington to warn the president. The attack will come soon.
Oh. Rest easy, my friend. If there were only some way I could get to Washington in a hurry. Good grief. This pendant. A hollow disk? I wonder. Under my clothes, a strange uniform. It wasn't a dream. Everything that laser man said must be true. I'd become a
Holo Man.
Now's as good a time as any to put these superpowers to the test. I have to get to Washington in a hurry, so let's skip the plane and...
Following Laserman's instructions, Holo Man concentrates his thought energies and activates his power of molecular teleportation. Leave the flying to...
me! Wow, it worked! I really wasn't sure, but those poor tourists look like they've just seen a ghost. Better concentrate and become... invisible. I'm still here, but I've blended in with the scenery, just like a chameleon. Let's see. That's the Washington Monument, so the White House should be right over... here! Right on target. Now let's hope the president is alone in the Oval Room. I'd hate to embarrass the First Lady by popping in where I'm least expected. Concentrate and... Mr. President, I presume.
What? Who? Where did you come from?
Mr. President, this country, our country, is in grave danger. You are aware of the explosion that destroyed the main test lab at the Laser Development Complex this morning.
Aware of it? If it weren't for a brave physicist by the name of Robinson, I would have been killed in it. But how could you know about it? That complex is top secret.
Mr. President, I am known as Holo Man. My powers are many. You saw me materialize through that wall. I had to talk to you about the deliberate explosion at the complex.
How do you know it wasn't an accident?
Believe me, Mr. President, I know. The Saurians were responsible for the sabotage plot.
But why? What could they hope to accomplish?
They tried to kill you, Mr. President, to help ensure the success of their plan.
Plan? Plan for what?
Imagine, Mr. President, a whole sky full of holographic missiles. Although harmless, the resulting panic in our cities and confusion among the ranks of our armed forces would leave us helpless before the real Saurian invasion. Your death would have added to the confusion.
I heard about holograms this morning, but what on earth is a holographic missile?
I think a demonstration is in order. Mr. President, what is standing in the middle of this room?
Why, nothing. There's only a bare carpet.
Watch closely, Mr. President.
Good heavens, a missile. How did you do that?
Try to touch the missile, sir.
My hand goes right through it. It's here, but it isn't here. I guess I do believe you. Holo Man.
I suggest we keep our meeting a secret, Mr. President. I don't think people would understand if you tried to explain me just now.
I believe you're right, Holo Man. But what do we do about the invasion?
I will leave immediately for Syria. You must try to prevent the panic from spreading when the holographic missiles appear.
I'll notify all the armed forces brass and top government officials personally.
Good luck to you, Mr. President.
The luck must ride with you, Holo Man. The invasion has to be stopped.
I can feel my powers growing weaker. Almost didn't make it through that last wall. Okay, Holo Disk, time for a recharge. The skies over Washington. Holographic missiles. The first stage of the invasion of the United States has already begun.
Don't miss the Saurian confrontation in the next super-epic issue of The Amazing Adventures of Holo Man.
You are listening to KRJS 92.3.
in Santa Rosa, simulcasting at 88.1 in lovely Bodega Bay.
That was pretty fun. Weird that it wasn't more popular. It could be that it was just ahead of its time. If it came out at the same time as those 3D hologram stickers that everyone had on their Trapper Keeper, well, it might have sold more units. It was cool, though. Let's move on. For our last tale, we are going to give a listen to Flash Gordon, The Lost Planet. It was released in 1983 by Kid Stuff Records. Kid Stuff was known for cassettes mostly, but they did dabble in records, including this one, which was released on 45. Remember those? Very cool. Let's take a listen.
Hello, everyone. This is Flash Gordon, and this is your Flash Gordon read-along book. Every time you hear this chime, it means it's time to turn the page in your storybook. Now we are ready to begin. Open your book, and we will start our adventure. And remember, when you hear this chime, turn the page. Although it started out as a routine mission of exploration, my most recent flight to the galaxy Alpha Centauri was anything but routine. Let me tell you what happened. My ship was cleared for takeoff, and I blasted off from Earth one bright, sunny morning late in May. In just a few minutes, my ship was free of the Earth's gravitational pull. I fired the main engines that would send me roaring into deep space. Through the rear cabin window, I watched as Earth grew smaller and smaller in the distance. Soon, it was just a tiny blue dot in the immense blackness of space. Without warning, the ship was rocked by a series of bone-shaking explosions. A meteorite shower, I thought. The heavy chunks of space rock burst into thousands of tiny flaming pieces as they crashed into the ship's meteor shield. Without the shield, the meteorites would have cracked the ship into bits. The remainder of the long flight was uneventful. Weeks of endless, uninterrupted darkness. I read and studied my charts to fight boredom, one of any space traveler's greatest enemies. In the weightlessness of space, exercise was fun and easy. I floated around the ship's cabin with ease. The computer radar alarm sounded, indicating I was approaching my destination. There, off the starboard side of the ship, loomed the object of this trip's explorations, the gigantic planet Titan. Although it had been discovered several years ago, no one from Earth had ever set foot on the huge cloud-covered world. I would be the first known explorer to see this strange planet. I fired the retro rockets and my ship roared down into the thick green clouds that swirled about the mysterious world. Now, I've seen many strange planets, but I wasn't prepared for what I saw on Titan. As my ship orbited the dark planet, I saw huge cities and industrial centers, but my sensors showed no sign of life. How strange, I thought. I decided to go in for a closer look. My ship glowed red hot as it raced down through the clouds. I landed the ship on a flat piece of land outside one of the sprawling cities that dotted the landscape. My onboard instruments indicated that the atmosphere outside was much too harmful for humans to breathe. So I put on my spacesuit and my helmet, opened the hatch door, and stepped out onto the surface of the alien world. The gigantic planet had a gravitational pull much stronger than Earth's. So I lumbered along at a snail's pace. After a hard journey, I reached the city. Still no signs of life. Odd, I thought. Someone must have built these cities and factories. Someone or something. I examined the buildings for clues. Low doorways and windows. Whatever built these structures was short, under 4 feet. Typical of evolutionary processes on a heavy gravitational world. I was well within the city now. I passed what appeared to be parks and libraries, sure signs of intelligent life, but I still had not seen any sign of life forms. Then, from inside a darkened building nearby, I heard a strange sound. Something moving, I thought. I grabbed my laser gun and started inside the building to check out the source of the sound. My helmet light shone ahead through the darkness. Suddenly, I saw where the sound was coming from. My eyes grew wide with amazement. Insects! Millions and millions of insects! A peculiar alien form halfway between cockroaches and praying mantis, crawling over everything. I recoiled with revulsion. Suddenly, it all became very clear. The foul atmosphere, the deserted cities and factories, it was a textbook case of a burnt-out industrial culture. Obviously, the pollution had long ago killed who or whatever had built this civilization. Only the insects had been strong enough to survive, and now they ruled this desolate world. How sad, I thought. An entire civilization wiped out because of careless dumping of deadly toxic waste. On the flight back to Earth, I filed my report. All intelligent life forms extinct. Planet Titan, unfit for habitation. This was not the first destroyed world I had seen in my travels. It made me sad every time I encountered something like this. Such a waste of life. Out of the cockpit window, I could see planet Earth up ahead. It glistened blue and white in a brilliant sun. Could something like this happen here, on our home planet? Only if we let it happen, I thought. Only if we stop caring about a clean and healthy planet. This is your friend, Flash Gordon, saying farewell till next time.
That wasn't a great recording, but sometimes with something so uncommon, you have to take what you can get. It wasn't that bad. Just a little bad. I don't know. I guess it's time to end the show. I hope that you had fun. I hope that you considered it a good use of your time. So, fellow Power Record enthusiasts, this is Pete Power. I'll see you soon.
This has been an IC Robots Radio production.
Trash Busters.
Hi, this is Derek for the KRJF Trash Buster Alliance Against Trash and Litter. Know what I like to do on a nice rainy day? Pick up litter. I have my umbrella in one hand and my trash picker in the other. When it rains, trash can flow down the drains and into the creeks where the otters and water moccasins live. It makes me sad to think of a poisonous water snake having to contend with Faygo cans and Doritos bags. This is Derek for the Trash Buster Alliance in support of slithery water snakes not having to swim with Trash Alliance of Santa Rosa.
This has been a message for the Sonoma County Water Moccasin Rescue Group of Northern California and the Redwood Kingdom.